You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey there, I'm Captain Dean, and welcome to another episode at Mellow Matt's Music and More. Once again, my guest today is a well-known bassist, guitarist, and songwriter. He has been in bands Vile Jive, Opossum Holler, and No One Else. He is Shelby Smith. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Thanks.
I know you're thrilled to be here.
I am.
Shelby, you've been around in the music scene for a while.
For a while.
How many years would you say at this point have you been involved here?
22 years.
Past the 20 mark.
Yeah.
Very nice. Going back to the beginning, where are you from?
Where am I? So where do I claim to be from?
Or where do you claim to be from? Are you from Mars?
I lived in Bowling Green most of my life.
Okay.
Around Bowling. I grew up in Smith's Grove.
Okay. Still Warren County.
Yeah.
Still Bowling Green-ish.
Yeah,
it's a territory.
We drive to Bowling Green and hang out at the mall as, you know,
of course.
Teenagers.
That is what we do around here. And obviously you've been here your whole life, so to speak, right?
Yeah, I was born out west. I was born in Wyoming, actually.
Oh, well, see?
Yeah.
Now the story's interesting. Did you ride a tumbleweed all the way here?
If I could have, I would have. I was 8 years old, so they didn't let me.
Cool. That's cool, man. I've been to Wyoming. It's very pretty.
It's amazing out there.
It is very nice. So what brought you here?
My parents. I was 8. my dad, he traveled around. He would drag us everywhere. And he was just kind of one of those people that like to do different things and would find a new job doing something different.
So work brought him here?
Well, yeah, sort of. And then just they had family here.
Okay.
Random work stuff brought him out, took him out west, and then they came back
to
Kentucky after a little while.
Very cool. So what got you into music, and how old were you?
I started playing trumpet when I was in middle school.
Very cool.
And I was... for middle schooler, I was an okay trumpet player, but then my parents didn't want to be in marching band in high school.
Yeah.
You had to go to band camp.
Yeah.
And my parents didn't want to deal with that.
I can relate to that. I recently talked my daughter out of playing flute in high school. I was like, you know, it was cool in elementary and junior high, but let's do something else.
Yeah. 'Cause
me and mom don't want to be broke.
Yeah.
And traveling all the time.
So I would, maybe you could do what my parents did with me. They let me trade my trumpet for a guitar.
Ah.
And that's when I started playing guitar.
Yeah. There you go. And you were in middle school?
I was going into high school.
What did you start playing in the beginning? What were, influence-wise, musically-wise, what got you on guitar?
I started playing what everybody played in the mid-90s, which was Nirvana.
Okay. Not a bad way to start.
The first song I ever learned was probably Man Who Sold the World.
Nice. So it's kind of a combination of Bowie and Nirvana influence there. So 90s era stuff really had an impact on you at that age.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Nirvana and Weezer and Green Day and, of course, a lot of like Marilyn Manson and Tool and all that.
Of course. And so you started on guitar, but I think before we started rolling, I knew you as a bass player. For some reason, that's what has always kind of stood out to me. Always hearing your name or seeing you, it seems like you played bass quite a bit.
I do, more recently. I started to actually switch to bass. I played guitar.
Right.
Most of my...
Okay, so the band's going into... the beginning, I guess.
Yes.
For you were a guitar player primarily.
Yeah, actually.
Because I didn't meet you until not that long ago.
Yeah,
like, we've been in the music scene for a long time, but we've never really crossed paths or anything.
Yeah, it's weird how that happens in Bowling Green.
It's small, but still big,
So, Opossum Holler was actually my first bass gig.
Wow, okay.
I switched to bass about 6 years ago, just decided I liked it better.
Okay.
So, I sold all my guitar stuff and... fortunately, I wasn't in a band at the time, and I just bought a bunch of bass stuff and decided I wanted to be a bass player.
Well, that worked out pretty good for you. What were you in prior to that as a guitar player? Did you have a garage band or anything at all?
Well, before Possum Holler, I was in Vile Jive. And,
okay.
And I was in a band right before that with Russell Brooks and most of
Double... The founder of this said podcast.
Yeah.
We must not leave him out.
It was actually, we were called Monty Falcon, and we were kind of like while Double Zero the Rabbit was on hiatus, we were kind of fill-in. So
it's
basically Double Zero the Rabbit with me instead of Adam.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And, but yeah, so, yeah, before that, I was in several bands. I was in, my first band was called Dark Dominion.
Okay.
And we were a bunch of teenagers.
Yep.
We were influenced by Korn and... You know, really
influenced
crappy.
Of the time.
Yeah,
yeah.
New metal.
Yep.
And a lot
it
of
it was like, pretty Marilyn popular.
Manson. Yeah,
it was an interesting time.
Yeah, to say the least.
That was the era that made me feel old, even though I wasn't old.
Yeah,
because I was, in my early 20s when that whole thing kind of came along, and I was like. What is this racket?
I was into
it. Go back to Green Day in the 90s.
I was into it, man. I was totally
A lot of people were. I had several people try to sit me down and go, man, just listen to this Korn record. It's really good. And I'm like, no, I don't think you understand. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up on the Misfits, and I was really bombarded with, like you said, the impact of what Nirvana and Green Day had in the early 90s. That changed my whole perspective because I was saturated in the hair metal world.
Right.
And that stuff smacked me and was like, what are you doing?
Well, that's why nu metal was the perfect transition for me anyway, because like I didn't grow up listening to metal or punk or any of that. I grew up listening to what my brother was into, which was new wave and you know, stuff like Tears for Fears and Duran Duran and stuff.
The 80s
era. And so and metal just sounded angry, and I mean I liked some Metallica stuff, you know, but most of it just like the solos and everything just sounded over the top and silly to me. Although I was into like Poison and
I think it's
hair metal when I was a little kid.
It's hard not to, because it's kind of it's like whatever was on MTV or on the radio is all we knew. I don't think anyone that I've really met around here ever got their hands on some kind of underground magazine opening their eyes to this world of bands that existed we didn't know anything about, you know. And it's like we only knew what was on MTV or what was on the radio to be that's cool, you know. And then the tide completely shifted.
And for someone like me who thought like Pantera sounded silly and like just angry, when I heard something that was like just bassy and rhythm and no guitar solos, but it was heavy.
It was heavy, and it was also very melodic.
Yeah, and emotional in some
complicated
ways.
Complicated somewhat rhythmically. I mean,
and compositionally, it was. Yeah.
So I can get that. Like, I got that from Tool.
Yes.
But the bands that were the Korn type thing and the Limp.
Oh, there were some really terrible bands
or whatever,
that came
like,
straight out of that. Yeah,
I just couldn't hang
but,
with that.
But like, you know, around the same time, I was getting to like Deftones and Rage Against the Machine and Marilyn Manson.
Some
and,
good stuff did come.
Oh, absolutely. From it, especially the early stuff, White Zombie.
And that stuff still holds up.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It still holds up today, in my opinion.
Yeah, Deftones, like you still go back and listen to Deftones.
Right.
It's just
I agree. Great. And that I was kind of late to the party on the Deftones, but what I've heard and got into, I really like.
Yeah.
So going back to that whole beginning thing for you as a guitar player, once you got good at guitar, that was the first band you got in was with Russell or what was?
Oh, like? No. First band I was ever in was called Dark Dominion when I was a teenager.
Right.
And then I was in a band growing up. When I was first starting, I was into a local band called Grand Monster.
Oh, you were in Grand Monster.
I was not in Grand Monster.
You were into them.
I was into
them. Okay, gotcha.
I looked up to them, and that was, of course, like John Treadway and Eric Curtis and David Prater, who have all been in several bands.
Yeah. These are my peers.
Yes. And when Grand Monster broke up, they started a band called Porn Lord.
Yes.
And I was in Porn Lord. So.
Okay. I didn't know that. I don't know why I didn't know that, but I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I don't talk about it a whole lot. I'm just kidding. No, we were, for the time, again,
well,
it was...
Eric and I and John, we all grew up together. And yeah. there was a time when I was in Marijuana Catfish, they started their first band, which was Orange Attic. And if you, yeah. anyone listening to this can go back to Eric Curtis or John Treadway's podcast, they talk about all this. But I was in Marijuana Catfish in like late 92, early 93. And those guys were a little younger than me. And they started playing in bands and getting decent at playing guitar and everything. And they formed their band, Orange Attic, which evolved into River. And yeah. that kind of turned into Grand Monster yeah. and Porn Lord. And so John and Eric were in several projects together over the years until yeah. they finally went separate ways. John ended up doing, what is it?
El Masivo
and Eric did other I know Eric was in Vile Job with you.
Yes.
So yeah, that was a cool time to be, because I was around them. I used to go to their band practices and stuff.
Yeah.
But we lost touch after a while because I was a little older and had grown up, and I'd moved to Nashville and stuff. So I kind of lost touch with them and with the music scene for a short time.
Okay.
But that was would be around the time that you were in that band with them.
Yeah.
That's pretty
About
neat.
About 99.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I moved to Nashville in 99, so that explains this whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. When all that got rolling, obviously you were playing locally. Digglers.
Oh, yeah, Diggler.
Tidballs when it first opened.
I played a lot at Tidballs. There was several, like when Pornlord was kicking, it was kind of in between Digglers and Tidballs because
right.
it was 99, 2000.
Right. Tidballs
so
opened in 2000.
We played a lot at, it was originally Gary's, but it wasn't Gary's when we played there, but it was called Susie Q's and
yes.
the Eclipse at different
yeah, that
times.
Was kind of the end of its life.
Yeah.
Right before the building was demolished.
And so we played, Pornlord played there a lot with yeah. like Seven Limbs. And
okay, that makes sense.
Framed, I think.
Yep. That's yeah. true. Man, I'm trying to think what else was around at that time.
Like other venues?
Yeah. You all played at the Armory, though.
We, Dark Dominion played at the Armory a lot. I don't know if Pornlord ever did. Of course, Grand Monster and a lot
there
of
was this
bands.
One club, and I say this in every fucking episode. There should be an episode about the clubs.
Yeah.
And we should just go down the list and have a panel of people talk about the clubs from yeah. each era and where they were. There was a place on 31W, which I think now is part of Medical Center.
The library.
The library.
Yeah.
And it was also a tattoo parlor.
Yeah, it was.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. yeah.
I played it's one show there. I was in Tomatoes, and John and Treadway, or John and Eric were in, I want to say that was
probably Grand Monster.
Grand Monster.
Yeah.
And we did one show together at the library.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I know, it was gone.
Yeah. Yeah, they played the library. I never played the library, but we... The first show I ever saw Grand Monster play was at Night Class.
Oh, yeah.
And we played several. Pornlord played several
Yeah, I think
shows
that's a name that doesn't get brought up a lot.
Night Class?
Yeah, well, yeah. I think it's just certain. It's a certain genre, a certain group of us
yeah.
really took that.
And
place
Night Class had, a, had some eras to it.
It did. Because the 90s really ruled, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really. And I've talked to people in the past that had. Mention things about things that happened there in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, some bands played there maybe really? In the mid to late 80s, but I don't really ever recall any stories of bands that played there prior to that. I think a lot of concerts on campus took place at Van Meter or on South Lawn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the standard spots that kind of still hold true today, you
yeah.
know? And bands would come through town, local bands would get to open for them. And they would play at like Garrett Ballroom and stuff. So
yeah,
I think
oh, yeah.
Night Class was kind of our generation's like all age club.
Oh yeah, it was for the time it was great. And
yeah.
then it got weird, you know, in the early 2000s it turned into a hardcore club basically. Like
which
I guess
is so weird. It looks like
looking.
A small skating ring. With no skating.
The mirrors all in the back.
I went in there recently just because I had something for my work to deliver in the bookstore that's now in its place.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Was it?
Because you can kind of, if you knew the building, you can walk in those doors for what is now the Western Bookstore or Bookshop or whatever, and you can just kind of remember where the DJ booth was and the stage. Yep. And it's all still within the realm of what that building is.
Yeah, but that's weird. That's
it
like
is very weird.
Night class memories are some of the like
night class
formative
memories, and Baker Street memories for me are very odd.
Yeah,
because the buildings are still there.
Yeah,
you know, but everything's gone.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. You were part of the late 90s, early 2000s music scene of this town.
Yeah.
And it was very hardcore. It was very heavy.
Yeah, it was.
And that was kind of the only time it ever really was.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of like heavy and
heavy
metal
bands,
and
but it dominated the scene at that time.
Yeah.
And it was welcomed in a lot of the venues too.
And it's not really like when people talk about the history of Bowling Green music, they talk about, you know, they talk about KGLFN, they talk about Nappy Roots, and they talk about the more, you know, the 2000 scenes, and they talk about prior, like earlier scenes, but they don't talk about the mid 90s scene a whole lot. And well, there was a whole lot going on.
There was
during that time.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it was.
Nobody really
dare
broke
I say
through.
It wasn't documented very well.
Yeah, it wasn't.
You know what I mean?
There's a lot of VHS tapes floating around.
There's a lot of lost VHS tapes because when DVDs came out and cell phones, it's like everybody just kind of tossed away the VHS. That would be kind of neat to see a collage of anything that's out there from bands that existed at the time.
Yeah,
and I know it's out there.
None of those bands really broke out, you know what I mean? Sixth Floor almost did, but
I mean a lot of bands were very dominant in this music scene, but also, and again this is brought up a lot of people could go to Louisville, Lexington, Nashville or whatever, and it was just kind of like within the circle around our town, but they always came home and always played a really good show at home, you know. So you were a part of that.
Yeah.
And how long, let's say, first band-wise, how long were you in that?
It seems like it was a long time, but it's probably only like 2 years.
Years.
I think I started in 97 was when I joined, when we started, you know, a bunch of kids started Dark Dominion. And then 99 joined Porn Lord.
And who was in Dark Dominion?
It was me and Eric Curtis's little brother, Mark Curtis.
Mark,
yeah.
On
and,
drums?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, he was a good drummer.
He was a great drummer.
Yeah, very, very, like, funky style drummer. Jeremy Hook was played bass.
Okay.
He doesn't really play. He hasn't played in bands in a long time. Mm-hmm. And then a guy named Justin Brizendine was our singer. I don't know what happened to him. Last I heard, he was in, like, a UPS driver in Louisville or something.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. He's set for life.
I guess. I haven't seen or heard him in 15 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. So going out of that band, what was the next band?
Well, that was Porn Lord,
okay,
which was Eric and John and me and David Prater, who was in Technology Versus Horse.
Yep.
And Jeremy was in that.
Okay.
Also, Jeremy Hook and Mark Curtis.
Oh, wow.
So it was kind of the leftovers from Grand Monster and Dark Dominion. We just decided to make one.
That
one
was a
band.
Pretty good size group.
Yeah, and we actually had Brandon Stapp. I don't know if you know him.
I know the name.
He's a DJ. I think he lives in Lexington or Louisville or something now. But he, like, you know, at the time it was the late 90s. So he did like scratching and stuff and samples and for a short period. So we had six or seven people at one
point. That's
crazy. Yeah. I don't know.
It's probably, like a
maybe it was just six.
Traveling circus.
Yeah. Then
I saw a 7-piece band in Nashville not that long ago, and it took them 30 minutes to set up, and they played a 20-minute set, and it took them 10 minutes to tear down. I was like, "What the hell just happened?"
It's part of the
act.
It was
more entertaining to watch them like rush to set up all the gear. This one guy was like, he had a xylophone and he played saxophone and he had a guitar and I was like, what the hell is happening?
That'd be an interesting like performance
it
art
was,
thing. Like,
it was something.
Set up this really elaborate musical thing with all these instruments
was,
and then
it
like
was something. And it was in one of those little coffee houses too. I'm like, come on, man. But they were young and they're kids And at this age, I can look at it and kind of applaud and be like, you know, at least you're doing something.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people aren't. All right, going out of Porn Lord. How long did that last?
So Porn Lord, we were together, I think, until like mid-2000 or something like that.
Okay.
So just about a year, year and a half, really.
And that led into Vile Job, correct?
No.
No? I mean, eventually.
There is a few bands in between. There is.
But you and Eric did kind of stick together throughout.
Actually, no. Eric and John and.
I feel like I'm talking like I know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's like you said, it's not very well documented.
Right.
Eric and John, I forgot who else. They were in a band called Sin and Stereo. Oh, with Matt DeVore.
Okay.
And that's kind of when Eric and Matt started playing together.
Okay.
But I was in a band. I had a couple bands. One was called Pronoia.
You're always good with names.
It was me and Jeremy Hook was in that, and a guy named Jim Cook, who's not alive anymore, and but he was a phenomenal drummer. I don't know. Oh, Colby Jones. There's a guy named Colby Jones who was kind of a rapper singer guy. In that. Yeah, so it was kind of coming out of
his
that.
Name sounds like he would be the rapper singer
he
guy.
Was very much that. He's another person I haven't seen in almost, you know,
he's probably a FedEx driver.
He might be. I think I heard he moved to Hawaii and was tattooing.
Oh, hey, good for him.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then after Pronoia, we started a band called Safe with Matt, and Colby was also in that.
But that's not the Safe that exists today.
No.
Okay. Same name, but totally different people. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I was like, wait a minute, that band's still around.
No. It was me and Matt DeVore and Colby Jones and Marcus McNeese.
Okay.
I don't know if you know Marcus.
I do. Man, I don't know where from, but I do know that name.
And Brad Osbrooks.
Yes.
In Safe.
Yeah, Brad and I went to high school together.
Oh, yeah.
The weird story about me is I went to Warren East and Warren Central, so I knew all the Warren East people, and I knew all the Warren Central people from that 90s era.
Yeah.
And Brad and I went to Warren East together.
Awesome.
Or Central, I'm sorry. God, I'm stupid. Oh, my God. Yeah, Brad Osbrooks and I went to Warren Central. John Treadway and Eric Curtis and I went to Warren East.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's the connection I have with all those.
I didn't know you went to Warren East.
Yeah. It was only my freshman and sophomore year.
Yeah. That's
so
how I know
been like
Eric
92, and... 91 through 90. Three or four, and then I moved. Yep.
Awesome.
Were you there at that time?
No, I was Warren East from 95 to 99.
You were there after we had already been graduated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eric was a senior when I was a
freshman.
That's
right. Eric should have been class of 96.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a grade below me. Woohoo! Look at all the interesting stuff you learned.
Yeah, so Safe was kind of where I started playing with Matt and Brad.
That's cool. And you and Matt still play together, and we will get to that
off
eventually.
And on. Yeah,
Matt DeVore is awesome.
He's a really good drummer.
We always have nothing but hugs and laughs when we see each other. I never really worked with each other, you know, but as drummers, I guess we have a respect and a love for each other. But he's a good dude.
Yes, he's one of my closest friends.
Yes, he is.
I love Matt.
And we will get to that because you are currently involved in something with Matt DeVore.
Sort of, yeah.
Well, I mean, in a nutshell, I mean, you were in these bands together.
Yes. So Safe was kind of the early version of Vile Jive.
Okay.
We kicked out Colby Jones and... And Eric wasn't in Safe because he wasn't a big fan of Colby, I think.
Gotcha.
And and so basically when we kicked out Colby, Eric's like, hey, I want to join now.
Okay.
And so Marcus went on vocals. And
Eric played keyboard, didn't he?
Eric
or was
played
he
keyboard.
Both keyboard and guitar?
No,
or
he,
just keyboard.
Just keyboard.
That's what I thought.
And me and Eric actually had a lot of, we butted heads a lot and Porn Lord, mm-hmm. Because we're both guitar players,
right?
And for some reason that didn't really work, but him on keys and me on guitar for some reason worked a lot better. And it worked really well. We had Marcus was the singer, screamer, and I think Brad left before it was Vile Jive. And we got a guy named I don't remember if Brad was ever part of Vile Jive or not. We got a guy named what was his name?
It's okay. It happens to everybody I talk to. I forgot a club the other day in an episode I was taping with somebody. And it was Shelley's Place. And I was like, I just could not think of the name of it. So if you listen to that episode where I'm like, oh my God, I can't remember. Well, it was Shelley's Place. So now you know.
You might edit this out, but hopefully he won't listen to it. He's a friend of mine. I've just gone blank on it.
Some friend.
I haven't seen him in a long time.
Well, keep talking and it'll come to you. Yeah. It seems to happen with everybody. But that was on the brink of the starting of it, right?
Yes.
Because Eric got in and Colby Jack got out.
Colby Jones, yeah, he got out. And Brad also left too.
Right.
I still can't remember his name. We had a different bass player.
Joe.
And early Vile Jive was like new metal.
Yeah.
Like,
I've got the Vile Jive CD and I listened to it quite a bit. And
well, this was, we
was
actually
prior
put
a, to the
this
CD?
This was before that. We had three
it
songs
still
has
that we moments were, though, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I go back and listen to it every once in a while. I'm proud of what we did.
You guys were a very active band. I mean, that name was pretty popular, you know, from what I recall.
We played a lot.
I saw your name on flyers a lot.
Yeah, mostly just the Tidballs, but right. we didn't travel too much.
Well, again, when Tidballs opened, all these other places had kind of stopped.
Yeah.
So it was like the timing of it worked out really good, you know.
It did. It was kind of a interesting time, you know, for the scene and for Tidballs.
But Vile Jive comes out of Safe.
Vile Jive comes out of Safe, and we...
And it just took some evolving to get to...
Yeah, so we took some of the riffs and some of the songs that we were working on in Safe and turned them... Marcus started singing, took out the rapping stuff and made it a little more new metal, screaming, okay. singing type stuff. And we actually recorded a demo at Canyon Studios in Louisville.
Okay.
With that stuff. And it's like, it's very different from... The Vile Jive
record,
yeah. It's I like it. It's you know a lot of samples. And
did it get released or?
I mean, it's on the internet.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, it's on. I think on our Bandcamp.
So if anybody Googles the name Vile Jive, they should be able to find all the links and stuff.
Yeah, that you might have Great. To. You might have to Google Vile Jive Bandcamp, but it's on there.
Good.
That's the
important thing I think because I've interviewed several people that are like, we never. Recorded anything or we recorded some stuff but it never got finished and mixed and released and I'm like why
right?
I don't understand that's the point of doing this you get so far and it's like I'm done
what's the point
I've never understood that so that's good Vile Jive is available on the intranet for everyone to find and
so yeah that early Canyon demo is on there
yeah good
and then Marcus kind of, you know, everybody probably knows the stories about Marcus in this town, but he.
I know.
We had kind of a falling out with him, and he went on his own path.
Okay.
And then we needed a singer and a bass player because our bass player at the time had left also.
Okay.
And we started writing some new stuff, and the stuff we were writing was, we just kind of decided to stop following any sort of formula and worrying about sticking to any sort of one style, and started getting really experimental with our mostly playing with genres and things like that.
Right.
And so,
I mean, it really shows on that record.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's diverse, but it's cool. It all fits, you know. It's like it is a unit.
Yeah,
you
know kind I mean? Of. Sometimes it jumps around, but
I mean I grew up on Primus.
Yeah.
And then I got into Tool, and to me those are two bands that are known for being complicated musically speaking. It's like the music nerd can geek out on the arrangements and the tempos and the changes, but a music fan can look at it and go, that's really interesting. Yeah. That's different. And to me, that's what the Vile Jive recording was to me.
Yeah.
Because I'd never been in a band like that, but I appreciated that kind of music.
Yeah.
So
like every band I was in before that, and I think a lot of the bands that Eric and Matt were in, they're very concerned. I mean, a lot of musicians are very concerned with writing songs that are going to be radio friendly and get
or
them
consistent
some,
and
yeah, and make them
sound like a they're all on the same planet.
Be able to do something with it as a career, you know.
Right.
But we all kind of found ourselves in a place. We all had similar influences. You know, I grew up listening to Mr. Bungle and Primus and
yep.
Faith No More and you know, bands like that. And I had always wanted to do that, but I never was in a band with other people that mm-hmm. wanted to do that.
Understood
and
that
all,
language.
Yeah. and all of a sudden, Matt and Eric were both, like, they're just, you know, ready to do something more, you know, exploratory.
Good.
So that's where that sound started. And so we found, well, there was a band at the time in Glasgow called Pilot.
Yes.
And they were a very, very good band. Their drummer left, and they ended up asking Matt DeVore to play drums for them.
That's right. Yep.
And
it takes me back. I remember this.
And so when we were looking for a singer, we were like, what about this Tony Oswald dude? He's got an amazing voice, and he, you know, his stage charisma was fantastic, and you know, we thought he would be perfect, and we approached them a couple times, and they kind of like, no. But eventually he ended up coming on board, and he brought along Shep, their bass player,
right,
to play bass with us.
That's Shep Shepherd, right?
Yeah, Matt Shepherd.
Matt Shepherd. Yeah. God, I don't know why I always...
He goes by
Shep
Shepherd on,
Shep
on
Shepherd,
social media.
Thinking.
Yeah. And so, you know...
I have no notes. I have no homework in front of me.
So those were, you know, two really just amazingly talented, really good dudes joined.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when we started,
that's
you know,
cool.
doing our thing.
And how long did that last? Because it seemed, like I said earlier, the name was out there.
Yeah.
And since I knew, you know, I knew Eric, we grew up together. I'm pretty sure I came to at least one show that I recall. But I was kind of in and out of this town for a while. I was on tour at that point when you guys were doing stuff. But I'm pretty sure I caught a show. It was a hazy time.
Yeah, it was a hazy time.
It was very foggy. how long did Vile Jive last after the initial beginning of it?
I think Vile Jive was like ran from 2003 till 2008.
See, that's not bad.
And that's when I say 2003. That includes the early version.
That early...
I don't remember when Tony and Shep joined and it became the other thing.
At some point.
At some point between 2003 and 2008, and I think 2008 was like our official last show. But then we continued to do like a yearly reunion every year until I want to say 2014,
mm-hmm.
which was our last the last time we played.
Okay. Well, you've kept in good, you know, contact with I know Eric and Matt.
Yeah.
Because you are now... Well, before we get into... I guess I'll jump too far. What was the Opossum Holler connection?
Okay. So, yeah. So...
Because I know Brad was in that band.
Brad was one of the founding members of
right.
Opossum Holler.
And JD was in that band.
JD was not.
Oh,
I don't...
Who
no.
am I thinking of?
Lloyd Nicely.
Yeah, yeah,
was
yeah. Okay. Matt was in the band.
Yeah, Matt.
Okay. I went with the wrong name. Matt and Brad were in the band. They're on the record that was put out.
Yeah, they're on the first.
The first one.
Yeah.
Were you on the next one?
Well, they put... Opossum Holler had a full length and then two EPs, basically.
Oh, okay.
And I was on the second
You were
EP.
On the EP. Okay.
Yeah. That's I was on cool. the Pine and Stone EP.
I don't have that.
It's
I just have the record.
It's out there.
I need to get all these things. I feel bad. Like, I can't host a local podcast and not have everything. Tommy has everything. I have very little. Yeah. But when did that happen? Was that
so
before or after the Vile Job thing?
So around 2013, I had been playing with Monty Falcon, which was Double Zero the Rabbit, mm-hmm. basically, and I played guitar in that. And
did that just do anything?
We played
just
some
played
shows
gigs,
and then
never
went back
made
to Double
records
Zero.
Or did. No. The Gung Ho Were a Band kind of thing?
No. No, it was just kind of a bunch of old dudes playing music for fun. But,
old dudes.
But at some point, I'm tired of playing guitar. And okay. So, like I said, I sold all my guitar stuff and bought a bass and just started really like focusing in on playing bass. I had always said for years that if I had started off as a bass player, I thought I'd be better. I enjoyed it more.
You're really good.
Well, thank you. But at some point I was just like, you know, to hell with that. I don't care. It doesn't matter that I didn't start off. I can be a bass player now. Right. So I did. And then after a certain point, I think in 2014, Apostle Paul was going to go on their second tour.
Yes.
And, they had went on one the year before and it went over well. They went, you know.
Yeah.
And
it seemed like chatter around town was something was going to happen.
Yeah, and
they could have
the Lamb of God connection and everything, yeah. And so they were going to go on another tour, but
because at the time Brad was in the band, and you know we hung out a lot or decent amount when we were growing up a little bit, and I was so rooting for that. I was like, oh, I'd love to see one of my friends like yeah. make it, you know, and but yeah, he ended up having to leave the band, didn't he? Have some like. Muscle issues or hands, something about his hands or something. I remember that, and it was also because he was concerned about his work as a tattoo artist. You know,
yeah, I don't know what
didn't want to jeopardize
what,
that.
You know, I don't want to speak for Brad.
No, we can't. But I'm just that's what I heard.
Yeah,
so I didn't know if that was true or not.
He left, and they were all of a sudden in a position where they had this tour booked and they needed a bass player. So
and you were the guy.
Matt reached out to me and
that's
asked
cool.
me if I'd be interested in going on tour, and then went on this little, you know, week and a half long tour. It was a short little thing.
Yeah.
And then basically they asked me to join.
That's
know,
awesome.
Full time. So yeah, it was a fun time.
So how long was that?
I think we went until about 2015. We went in the studio to record Pine and Stone,
mm-hmm.
Which was six songs. I don't even remember. I think it was
EP.
Yeah, it was an EP.
Yeah,
and some of the most proud of I've ever been of anything I've been a part of. It's, I'm really into those songs that we recorded.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're in a good band.
Yeah,
you're
I was
in a really good band.
Yeah,
and a
said,
trio,
when
which
I, when
is
I
even
was,
better. You know,
when I was in that band, I said I stood on the shoulders of two giants because it's just like Matt
yeah.
DeVore and Lord Nicely, just two amazing musicians, yeah. and then me, who had just started playing bass like a couple years before.
But you had the skill,
and so yeah. So we recorded that EP, and then it just kind of fizzled out
Damn.
After that.
That sucks, man.
Yeah, it does suck.
So what did you do after the Opossum Holler thing ended?
Nothing. basically,
that
I went,
would be hard to be like get that offer and a band that was on the brink of maybe something
yeah.
good coming out of it, and it just came to an end.
Yeah, yeah. So you know,
I can imagine that would take some time to just retreat and.
Well, I
you have to,
I
like
had,
refine yourself.
I had a child, you know, around
yeah,
that time.
Yeah.
I didn't give birth to her, but you know, I was a new father, and so things were a little more difficult,
right.
you know, and everyone else, you know, we're all getting old, and
yep.
and it's just kind
of
hard to put together something.
It.
So, yeah. So I haven't really. Done anything since then until very recently.
Yes, and the No One Else band groups formed out of what? Just friends getting together to have fun? And that would be you and Eric Curtis and Brad Osbrooks and Matt DeVore.
That's right.
And you got together and did the Weezer Blue album.
Yeah.
In its entirety.
Yeah.
And that was like the first show, or was there other shows?
That was the first show we did.
Was that the initial reason for getting together?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that's why it's called No One Else, because
right.
Weezer
but
song.
Recently, and I mean as of the recording of this, this was just a few months ago, you guys got back together to do the Weezer album, and you played Green Day's Dookie in honor of its 25th anniversary.
Yep.
And I was there, and it was fucking awesome.
Thank you.
But you were playing guitar.
Yeah.
So you played guitar on the Weezer stuff, right?
Yes.
And then you played bass on the Green Day stuff?
Yep.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah. And it's just kind of turned out. Worked out that way, you know. Just right. I felt more comfortable with the Weezer, singing the Weezer stuff, yeah. And playing guitar, and Brad felt
well,
more
that
comfortable
was
singing.
Fun, like you guys were really having fun.
Oh
you
yeah,
know? You
so
didn't
much
have
fun.
To, you know, it wasn't. We're a band. We have stress. We have all these things. Like you're like, let's just play that record that we all love in its entirety,
it's
and that's what you do.
Fun. Yeah, and it's not like extremely easy stuff. So
no,
you know, it's you know, I take it pretty seriously.
But I was just in the audience going, I've always wanted to play Surf Wax
America.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always wanted to play that song.
That's
so
one of the songs
so
that makes
jealous
you feel like a rock
watching
star.
Matt just cheesing out on it. Yeah. And I was like,
yeah,
I want to do that. But you guys had a really good time, and I know you've done another show prior to that. So this is just something for fun, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We've done it four times total, but it's been, you know, this last time we did it was the first time in a few years.
That's right.
That we've done it.
I was going to say, I thought there was a gap, and
we
did it because the picture came out. You all replicated the Weezer album cover, which I was applauding.
We did. We did one show actually where we played the Blue album, and then we did all of Pinkerton also, and that was
a
whole lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
It was just a full blown Weezer tribute.
Yeah.
That's cool. So that's been going on off and on for a decent amount of time.
Yeah,
Coming out of the ashes, I guess, for you on the Opossum Holler.
Well, thing. Yeah, that was kind of coming out of the ashes of Vile Jive in a way, because it's basically Vile Jive.
It really is.
Without Tony
and
with
speaking
Brad
of Vile Jive, you are having a reunion show in 2019 at Tidballs, right?
Yes.
Live on the Lot. And when is that?
That's April 20th.
This may air after that.
So it was on April 20th, or it might be coming up on April 20th?
Well, but just in general, the fact that you are getting back together, is this just for the sake of that show, or are you guys working on things? I know you have been working on some music.
I'm working on some stuff.
Is it just solo stuff? Is it Vile Jive working on stuff? What? What's going on with you?
So Vile Jive is this is just a reunion show. Tony, we had to kind of drag Tony down. He's
pay him a lot of money.
Yeah, he lives in New York
oh,
City
wow.
now.
Yeah,
and he's very busy with you know he's a filmmaker.
But
and,
that's cool that you guys are doing it. But it did get you back, and like something happened to where you've been working on stuff recently.
Yeah,
you're very fairly active on your social media stuff of showing pictures or sharing sound bites and things. So I know that you were working on stuff.
Yeah.
What does the future have in store for Shelby Smith?
Well, I don't know. I'm working on an album right now, and it's kind of that point where I was talking about we're all getting older. It's hard to get people together.
But the important thing is you're making time to do it.
Yes.
And you're getting it out. Yeah. Like, it's in there.
It's definitely in there. It's just slow going. I have about 10 to 15 songs
that are
in the works, and you know, hopefully I'll just be able to get it done and then get a band together to play it. So
okay.
I do plan to play it out.
Good. Well, you should. I mean, again, that's the point of this, right?
Yeah.
I've never understood people that can do all this amazing talent and they just keep it all to themselves and stay home.
I definitely
like,
don't
want to. You should be out there on stage.
No, that's where I really want to be. And then I'm also always looking for bass work. So if anybody,
well, again,
needs a bass
you're an incredible bass player, so you shouldn't have a problem with that. Well, going into that, you want to stick to bass? Like, if you get this new project going, would you play bass and sing? Okay.
Yep.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah,
but like I said the other night, you played guitar and bass, so I was like, oh, he's just showing off his talent.
I'm, you know, recording wise, I'm doing everything you're doing except for the drums, but I'm not a good drummer at all. But
no, but you're a good songwriter and you're a good bass player, and a bass player is really close to being a drummer, so you understand drumming. You just may not sit down and actually play them.
Right.
Yeah. So, believe it or not, you're actually a good drummer.
In my head, I'm a...
In your head, you're a great drummer. So, you're working on that with, obviously, no deadline.
Yeah, no
deadline. No thing to throw out there and say, oh, I'll be releasing a single or anything.
If there is a deadline, I'd be screwed.
But anybody that knows you or follows you or is friends with you can obviously just know that you're working on something. And eventually, it will see the light of day.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And you'll be... proud and be able to hold it up, and
we'll see. It's kind of, you know, Vile Jive ended for me with a lot of kind of untold stories,
right.
And kind of,
well, you're
so this kind of takes off where Vile Jive ended,
mm-hmm.
in a way. It's kind of along the same lines, but more put together songs. It doesn't jump around so much, but it's still a lot of exploring different genres, exploring layers of sound and things.
It's
like
good.
That.
I'm excited. I'm excited to hear it. We got together and jammed a couple times, so that didn't work out necessarily.
No.
It's totally my fault.
No.
But I know you're a good songwriter, and I know you get really talented. So I know whatever you're working on is going to be good. So as a Bowling Green music scene fan, and you being a part of the music scene, that's good to know that the future's got something coming and you're not done yet.
Oh yeah, definitely not done.
Speaking of Bowling Green music scene, what are you a fan of? Who
right
are
now.
You a fan of? Like, what do you listen to? Who do you get into? Because you've been in some great bands from here.
Yeah.
But who past or present, maybe?
Well, I'm really into Josephine's and Sugar Daisy right now. I think those are probably the two.
Those are your big two?
You know, the bands here with the most
Sugar Daisy kind of left town and went to Nashville, I think.
I guess. I don't know. But whenever they play, it's always a great
time.
They do.
They still play here quite a bit.
Anybody that can, you know, I always look for the bands that can, you know, pack out Tidballs and really, you know, when you're there and they're playing and it's late and everybody's drunk, it's just like, you know, a shit show and everybody's having a great time and people are jumping around, and doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of bands that do that anymore.
Well, yeah, and we've talked about that with various people in episodes over the course of me doing this. It's like, it's just the tide is shifting,
yeah,
or has shifted. And the next generation just doesn't seem as interested.
Yeah, and the audience here is weird. You know, the people are weird because I see bands at Tidballs, just amazing bands, play, and they're playing in front of 20 people.
Yep.
And there's tons of really great bands, but...
And these days, you can't blame it on, like, marketing or any publicity, because this town has an amazing amount of publicity, like between television and radio, and then of course every band can handle their own, you know, social media way of promoting things, which that's not like stapling a flyer up on a bulletin board at some random place in town. That's like thousands of people can see that, and they all like, oh, I'm gonna stay home.
And so there's something different. There's something else there that I think that's why I'm into like Josephine's and Sugar Daisy, because they both have that something else, you know, whether it's the Sugar Daisy wearing balloons on their shows
it's like a party.
It's a party.
It's almost like a New Year's Eve party.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Because I saw them on New Year's Eve, and I think that will always stay in my mind. Like, they're like the ultimate New Year's Eve.
Yeah. So it's a mixture of having something special, bringing something else besides just good music to the show, and also just doing it.
Yeah.
Like, they're both very,
just
very hardworking bands.
Very
and doing
wide,
it over and over.
Very,
you have to play over and over and over and over and over again until, you know, you're beating it into people's heads, and that's what it takes. And I don't think a lot of bands care to do that, or you know, even if they're really good, they just
it's just
they don't work.
It's like Dylan said, the times are changing.
Yeah,
he was right. Still,
but there's a lot, you know, like Spirit Week is. I love Spirit Week. Okay. The Beach Benders, they're from Nashville, but they're just amazing.
They come up here every now and then.
Yeah, it's and of course the Renaults are kind of related. Yeah. To those are two bands that just every time they play, you know, get really excited.
Cool. Well, is there anything I've missed, or is there anything else you would like to discuss before we wrap this up?
I think we about covered the last story. I think we could.
Well, Shelby, I appreciate your time. I appreciate you taking time to do this today. And anyone out there listening to this episode can check out Shelby Smith and look up the band's Vile Jive and Opossum Holler. I'm assuming the EP that you're on with Opossum Holler is online?
Yeah. Yeah, Pine and Stone is on Spotify and it's on Bandcamp.
Okay.
And then, of course, all the rest of the stuff is
okay.
As good, if not better.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, and we'll see you around.
Thank you.